Well, now, today I want to speak briefly about two contemporary Quakers in the Philadelphia area, one of whom you have heard a good deal about, John Woolman, but I assume that some of you may not have read all beyond the assigned part of the journal, and I thought I would say something about his later life. I think your reading went down at least to 1762, and you see he lived 10 years longer. At two of those years, he wrote no journal for. There is a journal of his later life, and I'll just say something further of this of his later life. I think you read through the Indian journey, did you not, to the Indians in Pennsylvania in the reading? Wyalusing out in central Pennsylvania. Well, unassigned are parts of the journal which tell of later events, and I don't know that I need to summarize them all. They consisted of some minor journeys in Pennsylvania. And in 1769, a woman felt a concern to go down to Barbados or to the West Indies. This, of course, was the place where he would see the slave trade in operation and at its worst. He knew that because he'd read about it. And he felt somehow that he ought to go down there. You know the tentativeness with which these concerns, as friends call them, were entertained. And also that when a friend wished to travel abroad or away from his own meeting, he got a minute or release, a testimonial from the meeting to which he belonged. John Woolman asked and got such a letter, and prepared to travel to the West Indies. But finally he gave it up. It's the kind of thing that is always a little hard for a conscientious person, especially if he's sensitive about public relations. To aim to do something and then to have to change your mind, it just doesn't look right. John Woolman stood that and did withdraw his plan to go down to the West Indies, and remained for some further years at home or near home. Then comes the gap of 2 years in his journal, and then he made up his mind to go to England, yes?
Why did he give up the trip?
I don't think he says. There are not many things he doesn't say, as you know. I mean, the inner motives he's very careful to analyze. I think for one thing, he probably thought that every ship going to the West Indies was somehow involved in the slave trade, or in bringing slave-grown products up to the Delaware harbor. Inwardly, you might guess that he just thought he couldn't see the sight of the horrors of slavery. He was so sensitive about even reading about it. Or he may have simply felt that the delicate guidance of the Spirit could move first in one direction and then could move in another. And this sensitivity on his part is the way he lived, isn't it? If you ask him, the real answer to your question is, he now felt that he didn't feel called to go, that the current had, concern had been lifted. But why? That's your question, and I don't think any of us could answer it. Yes? Not sure he could.
Did the meetings sometimes foot the bill for these expenses, or...?
I expect it would, but I don't think I had to. I think he saw his way clear financially. He was pretty, as you know, in another matter, he was very sensitive about not having the meeting pay for the printing of an anti-slavery book. You perhaps remember that. And therefore, if this was a concern in connection with slavery, and if there were members of the meeting who contributed to the stock funds of the meeting, who believed in slavery or were not as opposed to as he was, then he would be sensitive about that too. Now, I'm pretty sure that when he traveled at his own expense.
But there were some people that that were financed by the media.
There were. You can always ask that to be done. That's still true. A person that has means would hardly ask the means to support it, and a person that hadn't means would think twice before he asked the means to support it. For example, this summer there's a conference in Richmond, and members of Philadelphia Area Meeting have been appointed to attend. I talked to one or two of them, and I said, "Well, of course your way will be paid." They said they will pay it, but we don't think you'll take it. And they're not wealthy people at all. There are people that get so little income that they don't pay an income tax. And the scruple about paying income tax, a kind of scruple that says, if we go to that meeting, we'll pay it out of our own pocket. Yes?
How does a person like this feel about making this a joint effort? In other words, a conference is being held, or someone has a concern to go speak to somebody. If an individual goes, oftentimes they want to take a letter of recommendation or an introduction from their own meeting or from a local meeting. In the same way, shouldn't they feel that this is a joint effort being done by the meeting and not something for personal gain?
Yes, that's a delicate question. In what extent it is a personal concern? And that's the way it ought to be, that for sure. On the other hand, a personal concern ought not to be carried through without the consent of the meeting. And I think any delicate person knows that after this has been laid before the meeting, John Woolman, and to the quarterly monthly meeting, that he has behind him the interest and the sense they share in whatever he's doing on their part. That's not quite the same as financial share. But a friend doesn't do this without consent of the meeting and without their checking on. As we learned from the early days, at least from the time of James Naylor, for an individual friend to do something without the approval of the meeting raises a difficulty. So that John Woolman was aware of that and followed that custom. And then, of course, carrying this minute wherever he went, he would present it to the minute meeting to which he went. And they would read it. And I'll tell you in a moment what happened. In 1672, he decided to go to England, where the slave trade, of course, was controlled, and where many friends were at least, they were British and part of the British policy. I don't think many of them were actively concerned in the slave trade. It might not have been as negative to it. At any rate, he thought English friends had a responsibility about slavery. And so he decided to go. With him went a wealthier Philadelphia friend named Samuel Emlyn, and I think one or two others, friends in the neighborhood. And so they went down to Chester and got on board a ship. The dates are May 1st to June 8th. This is the voyage from Chester to London. He wrote a journal on this voyage and tells of the things he thought about. One evidence of his characteristic of him was that he decided he wouldn't go in the cabin with a dozen other passengers. He would rather go in the steerage. The cabin was luxurious from his point of view, and he made up his mind that he'd have to go in the steerage. He went down to see the boat, as they always did before while it was in harbor, and made up his mind he'd go steerage. This was a form of simplicity, testimony against luxury. It had one other advantage. It put him in close contact with the sailors, who also were bunk there. And in his journal, he shows again his insight into the sufferings and his sympathy for the sufferings, and moral danger, at least for young boys, in the steerage. I don't believe any profession was had a lower reputation than the merchant marine. And these young boys, living with older men who were profane, no doubt, exposed by their watches out in the weather, taking their turn on deck, going to bed with wet clothes and crowded quarters and all that sort of thing, he was fully aware of, thought about, wrote about. Merchant ships didn't carry the kind of cuisine that a modern ocean liner carries for passengers. In fact, people took their own food, including live chickens, to be eaten en route. Well, woman looked very sensitively at those chickens, seasick, some of them. And I don't know that you've noticed, Marie, in the journal, how sensitive it is about animal life. It'd be interesting to go through the journal and pick that out. You'd see that. Well, this is simply a late instance of it. Well, never mind about the voyage, except that it was just another case where his sensitivities, not to his own suffering, but to the sufferings of others, it was very evident.